you're one of those, your phone's probably going to ring. And then, of course, Fast Blasts. If you want to do a one-sentence summary that will convince me yours is a serious and good ghost story and include your phone number, then maybe. And then, of course, people who just get in on the line. So we'll, you know, we'll mix it up. Now, this program is only about one thing, life, and more importantly, death. Life is short, really short. See, I can remember when I was crawling in the crib, and here I am 60 years old, staring at the Reaper. And so it shall be for all of you, all of us. Now, that leaves a really big question, the one that probably drove me to begin this program in the first place. Is there anything after all of this? Or is this some accidental or even purposeful biological existence that goes no further than this? I don't think so. I've been convinced by a number of things, electronic voice phenomena, the voices of the dead that I have heard, and the people I trust who have recorded them. And then, of course, what you're going to hear tonight. And that would be real ghost stories from real people. So it is kind of scary at times, because this is the real McCoy. Ghost to Ghost 05, coming right up. As I said, these are just regular people you're about to hear. Regular people. And so, if you're wondering whether there's more to this life than just the short physical existence that we have, you're going to want to listen during the evening, and I think at some point you'll begin to convince yourself, and for that reason alone, it's well worth the listen. East of the Rockies, you're on the air, and the first caller this night, good morning.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi. What is your first name?
My first name is Dave.
Yo, Dave. Where are you and what you up to?
I am in northeastern Ohio and I am working.
You're working?
Yes.
Oh, you're working. What kind of work do you do?
I am a police officer.
A police officer. Okay. You know, that makes it particularly interesting. Something happened while you were on duty?
Yes, actually.
Yeah, really? All right. Fire away.
Well, I've been a police officer about 10 and a half years, and on the south end of the city in which I work, there are two large estates right across the street from one another. Mm-hmm. And about 4 years ago, my buddy Joe and I were working the midnight shift, and we got called to one of the estates about 12:30, quarter to one in the morning. Somebody had thought maybe there were some deer hunters on the property. They have a large wooded area on the property there. So we went to check it out.
Was it a call, you know, people with guns, that kind of deal?
They got, all we got was that they thought maybe there were deer hunters in there. I don't think they actually heard shots. They may have seen.
Yeah, well, still, if you know there's a gun at the call, you're heads up. All right.
Well, absolutely, yeah. We weren't going to venture actually into the woods until we figured out what we had. So
I hear you.
We got there, and we were standing along the edge of the wood line, trying to listen to see if we heard voices or, you know, movement or anything in the woods. And after a few minutes, I heard, as clear as day, no question about it, the sound of a small child laughing. And I immediately turned my flashlight on and I started looking. It sounded like it came in from just a few feet inside the wood line, and I could see probably 15, 20 feet into the wood line.
Right.
And I'm looking and I don't see anything. And I don't hear any movement, no leaves rustling, no nothing. And when I had turned my light on, Joe had turned his on at the same time. And I asked him, I said, did you hear what I just heard? And he looked at me and he said, I think so. It sounded like a little kid laughing.
Mm-hmm. Last thing you'd expect to find in the woods late at night.
Exactly. So I said, okay. So we looked around a little bit and We didn't see anything, hung around for maybe another 10 minutes, and nothing came of the call. So we left, and we had referred to it a couple of times over the years, you know, just kind of jokingly.
Mm.
Well, fast forward ahead to about 4 months ago, Joe and another officer got called back to the same estate, this time for an alarm at the main house. They got there, and they were met by the caretaker, who explained that the power line had been cut to the house, and that's why the alarm had gone off, and they were standing outside talking to him.
Right.
And Joe was, they were near the woods, and Joe was kind of looking around a little uneased, and the other officer, Ron, asked him what the problem was, and Joe said, "These woods just kind of give me the creeps." And that was all he said.
Mm-hmm.
And the caretaker looked at him and kind of chuckled and said, "Why, have you heard the kids laughing at you from the woods?"
Oh, really?
And Joe was obviously dumbfounded and said, "Actually, yeah, I did. What's the story?" Well, apparently, according to the caretaker, the same family had owned this property for generations and generations. And years ago, one of the first couple of generations to own the property had two small children that used to play in the woods there, and they both drowned in the pond that was in the woods.
Yes.
And ever since then, according to the caretaker, the family and the maintenance people and caretakers and visitors and whatnot have all reported hearing these kids laughing from the woods.
God. That just scares the hell out of me, and I'll tell you why. Have you heard some of the shows that I've done with EVP?
Yes, I have.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, I know, and so many of them appear to be small children, you know, and as you're considering life after death, man, the last thing you want to imagine is that a child remains on this earth as it was after something, for example, like that.
Right.
I mean, that's to me, that's horrifying. And even to the EVP people, it's horrifying. And so there you go. And so so you think that what was heard was a ghost, and it was a child.
Well, I know when I heard it, it was, there was no mistake in it when I heard it. And like I said, Joe said he heard the same thing. I didn't have to ask him, "Did you hear the kid laugh?" He just said, "I heard what sounded like a kid laughing."
God, I really appreciate the call. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Art.
All right, take care. There's a police officer, and as I said, the last thing you want to contemplate is that if there is another life that it's spent on this earth, perhaps in the same form eternally, there is one counterbalance argument to that possibility, and that is that it is only an echo of you, that your soul has moved on, and that what remains to be heard, like by those two police officers, is only an echo of some sort of your life. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
My name is Dan from Greenfield Park, Quebec.
Hello, Dan.
Yes. Just about the last caller, I realized that the story was the children had died on the estate, and the woods may very well be haunted, but it has to be remembered that a lot of times you are called with children's laughter because it's very tempting to go and help a distressed child.
Well, that would be
true. You really don't know what
true.
You're going to have when you get there, you know?
Yeah, that certainly would be true. Almost anybody would attempt to rescue a child, and I really should have asked them why they didn't venture into the woods, but anyway.
Yeah, that's not why you called, right?
Yes.
Okay, my story. I was an Army brat. My father was in the Canadian Forces. And when I was around 10 years old, it was the mid-1950s, we were stationed in Western Command in Alberta, Canada, and it was a desolate posting, the old story of the prairies where you can watch your dog run away for 5 days. You know?
Yes.
And my mother originally was from Glasgow, Scotland, and she had come over as a young girl, so she had been in Canada for 30 years or so, or 25 years. And her only contact at home was in the old days. It was, you know, he didn't phone. It was the old form airmail letters, and they went back and forth over the years, but she had never seen her family or visited Scotland before. So one evening, this is back in, we're in Alberta, we had gone to bed. We'd been in bed for hours, and my mother went up to bed, and in the tradition of the 50s, father locked up and secured all the windows, and he followed her to bed. And sometime in the small hours of the morning, my mother woke up and was really felt an urge to go downstairs and pour herself a glass of water from the kitchen sink, something she can't ever remember having done before.
Uh-huh.
So she simply used the light from the staircase to get down the stairs. And as she got to the bottom of the stairs, she just froze, because sitting in her armchair in the living room was an old woman. And the old woman calmly gazed at her. My mother, it was probably a few seconds, but my mother said she was felt she was rooted there for minutes. And then she was terrified. She ran up the stairs and she broke into the her and my father's bedroom crying. And he woke up and he said, "Okay, well, I'll go downstairs and find out what's going on." So he came down the stairs and checked all the doors, all the windows, and of course there was no one in the house.
Nothing, huh?
No one. So the next morning, when they got up, my mother was still pretty upset. She hadn't got much sleep. My father said, "Well, I can stay home today and take care of the kids, whatever, and I'll go to work and just be with you, And she said, "No, go ahead to work. I'll be okay. I'll have coffee with friends and I'll get over it." So he went off to work, and he came back within an hour, because when he arrived at work, there was a telegram on his desk, and he opened a telegram, and the telegram said that my grandmother, my mother's mother, had died the night before when lightning struck the tenement houses in Glasgow.
Wow.
In the ensuing fire.
And so there she was.
And she was, well, my mother hadn't visited her, but, the old lady she saw would have put her in the long brown hair. Now then, when she looked back, it would have been exactly as she would picture my...
Do you think that it's that the departed wants, I don't know, somehow to comfort the living, let them know there is still an existence,
well,
I'm still here, something, I don't know.
It's really something, because they repeated your 1993 show, I believe, last night.
That's right.
And you had, at the end of the program, you summed up by saying that, before the souls depart, they want to visit the friends they perhaps want to.
All right, buddy. I really appreciate the call. That's what would make sense to me. You would want to communicate, of course, to you, the closest one to you, to let that person know that you're all right, that it's not all over, that things are going to be okay, and they too will be okay. Very few by percentage make it. But that's a pretty, pretty interesting story, I would say, wouldn't you? I'm presuming they compared photographs and that the identity was firmly made, but you can see why somebody would want to get back. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Glenn from North Bend, Oregon.
Hello, Glenn. How are you doing?
Doing great. My little story starts when I'm about 25 years ago, 17 years old, and we used to take a shortcut through the woods in Freeport, New York, Long Island. And heading towards the shortcut, it saved me about 12 blocks and had to go through like a marshy swamp area. About 100 yards in, it's dark, it's in the back of an old railroad station place, had a low-lit light. Could barely see. You could see 20, 30 yards or something. About 100 yards into here,
uh-huh.
Had to follow a trail along the fence. I sat down to smoke a cigarette. And I'm sitting there, 17-year-old. I'm not scared of much, especially growing up in New York, all kinds of surprises.
Man, when you're 17, you're eternal.
Pretty much.
Yeah, that's right.
Until after this experience.
Uh-huh.
And out in the marsh, I'm sitting down, and out in the marsh, I hear some dog tags, they clanking together, and I didn't think much of it. I thought of dogs out there just goofing off. And as I sat there, the chains just started coming closer, the tags, they were clinking and clanking and started coming closer.
Huh.
So I'm thinking a dog's on its way, and no big deal, no need for alarm. And as my ears, I couldn't really see, to my left was a creek that came out of a pipe that came under the property, and it wrapped around in front of me, about a 10, 12-yard drop to the creek. The creek's 10 yards. Then the sandbank on the other side, and then a bunch of marshy, type small trees, and then you could see maybe 10, 20 yards past the creek. And here come those clanking sounds coming closer and closer, and my ears were telling me that should be visible soon. Should be coming into my range.
I ought to be seeing whatever this is, yes.
And I just still thought it was a dog, so I'm expecting to hear a little critter, coming through the grass and the leaves and whatnot.
Yes.
and I hear two footsteps.
Huh.
I hear a something with two footsteps.
As in thump, thump.
Well, yeah, thump, thump, and it's coming towards me.
Not a little French poodle.
No, not a French poodle, not a German shepherd. Mm. Two distinct footsteps coming through, and you can hear the grass, you know, walking, and the dog chains are still clinking, clinking. And that's about when my alarm went off. I'm thinking, okay, this is a problem. There's no way you can think that this is anything but a problem.
Something big.
Something's wrong. And my ears were telling me that I ought to be able to see this thing. And it should be right there on the other side of the creek. And this kind of dragged on for a couple minutes. It didn't just walk up.
You ever seen a deer that was being hunted, whether by man or a predator? It doesn't matter. The deer, just before, usually just before it's pounced on or shot, it gets this invisible communication, and it suddenly knows it's in mortal danger. Kind of like that, you mean?
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking serial killer. I'm thinking something I didn't know.
Just bad.
But I was just bad, and I was ready to go because I should have seen it. My ears were telling me it was there, but I couldn't see it. And I'm looking around trying to figure, should I go back to the right or should I go to the left? And I'm in New York, so it's not necessarily always a friendly place, and I'm out in the middle of this sump. And you can't see that good. To get to the back street of the neighborhood I was heading to, I had to make a left about 10 yards, go across the pipe to the right, go another 25 yards, and then up the side of the hill and bring me to the dead-end street up there into the neighborhood where I'd have about 30 more blocks to my house.
Uh-huh.
And the trail on the other side went away from the creek. So whatever should have been down there on that bank would have had about a 30-yard trip to where it was, and I had a 30-yard trip. So I got up and bolted. I figured I could beat it.
Uh-huh.
I hang to the left, run to the right, and I'm in full sprint. And I'm athletic type. I'm 6'2".
I understand running. If you're in that kind of fear, running is good.
Running is good.
Yeah, okay.
And just as I got to the point where I would go up this hill, 10, 12-foot shadow, red beady eyes, stepped up from the bank and was standing right.
God, I hate red eyes.
I hate red eyes.
I mean, of all the... So, how 10 feet?
10 or 12.
10 or 12 feet, and red eyes.
Huge. Have
right. Well, see, after that, for me, it wouldn't be a problem because I would have a heart attack and fall down dead, out of danger completely, and on to the next life.
That would have been okay, but I froze. It has horns. It's just an outline. It's dark, as dark could be.
Horns?
Well, it had all you could see was an outline. You couldn't see it. Looking into this creature,
yes.
It was as dark as space.
Yes, sir.
Red beady eyes. Mm. Beady eyes. Not just red glowing eyes, red beady eyes. Mm-hmm. And I froze. Uh-huh. I just stuck. And I don't know how long I was there, sitting there contemplating some kind of communication coming at me, like step into me or something. I didn't know. But I didn't want to have nothing to do with it. So I did what any red-blooded American 17-year-old would do in this situation. I turned around and ran. And I ran. And I didn't stop running. I ran all the way home, and this is like 40 blocks.
Yeah.
You know, this is like 2 miles. And my mom and dad, I came home sweating and huffing, and my parents kind of looked at me odd. And, you know, I was a good-raised, yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am, Catholic boy. And I was in almost shock, and I couldn't explain to them what had happened. I didn't dare. They would have committed me. You know, they would have sent me. They would have sent me to private school or something.
So you've kept this to yourself ever since.
I've told one person in my life,
but not your mom, not your dad.
No, I told because I grew up in Catholic schools, and I tried to tell my priest.
All right, briefly, because we don't have a lot of time. What do you think you encountered? What do you think that was?
It was just a definition to tell me that life just isn't what I had figured out it was at that point. It was just something that it alienated me from what I had considered normal.
There's no chance it was a dream, obviously.
Oh, no.
No drugs, none of that baloney.
No.
So you're certain, you know what you saw. What do you now think? This is years later. What do you think you saw?
I think I saw a bridge towards wizardry or shamanism or something that I had an opportunity, had I done something maybe, other than being totally afraid,
yes,
that maybe I could have maybe launched myself into another plane, because certain things have happened over the last 25 years.
You mean, for example, if you had approached that thing, if you had just sort of said, okay, let's rock, then you might just be gone. I mean, one of those people that just disappears, and you'd be somewhere else right now. No question about it. The most important question in life is about death, isn't it? And you have all of that short life to consider it. And that's what we do on nights like this. We'll just keep the stories coming. You be the judge of the person. Now, so far, I judge them to be pretty regular people. How about you? West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. This is Kyle from San Antonio.
Hey, Kyle. How you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you. I have a story for you, something that happened when I was just a hair over 4 years old, something that scared me so badly back then and still does now about 25 years later. I get goosebumps thinking about it.
So you remember, you have clear memories of being four. Some people don't. I guess I do, and even further back than that, I can actually remember being in the crib.
Yeah, I do have some very good memories of, you know, 3 or 4 years old around that time, but this one particular incident kind of seared itself into my brain because of how bizarre it was.
All right, what happened?
All right, my family lived in Northern California at the time, town of Chico, and we had a motorhome, a very, very big motorhome that we would take trips in. And one summer night, I think it must have been a 4th of July weekend because my parents had decided to just take me and a couple of family friends on a little evening trip to some public park that was a little ways away along the Sacramento River.
Uh-huh.
So we were in the motorhome, and we never ended up making it to the fireworks festival because of this thing that I saw. Still don't know what it is. I'm hoping maybe you or some of your viewers might have an idea.
I don't have viewers. I have listeners, radio, so you're going to have to describe it.
Okay. Well, while we were on the road, it was a dark, unlit highway, a heavily forested area, as I remember. At some point on that trip, I decided to go to the back of the motorhome away from everyone else because there was a window right next to the bunk bed that I like to look out of.
Uh-huh.
And I went back there, looked out the window, and like I said, it was pretty much pitch black outside. You couldn't really see anything, but I was watching the, you know, the shadows of the trees going by. And all of a sudden, something appeared in the window right across from me. It was a face. It looked like a man's face, except it was hanging upside down.
Oh, brother. Now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. You're in a motorhome. You're moving or you're moving, right?
Yes, we were on.
Because you said things were moving by the window.
It must have been a little state highway or something.
And so here's an upside down face, like this thing's on your roof looking down at you.
Yeah, well, that would be the easiest explanation.
Oh, crap.
Yeah. It had a...
And so what did you do?
Well, it obviously frightened me very badly. It had these glowing eyes. The face itself was had a blank expression, but the eyes looked like they wanted to do something.
Let me guess.
Very bad to me. So,
glowing red.
Well, I'm actually a little bit colorblind, Art.
Glowing will do. Oh man, that's.
They were glowing and they didn't look very friendly. So
I
went screaming up to the front of the motorhome.
Yes.
And freaking out, you know, telling my parents and the couple of friends that were with us that I saw, you know, a bad man's face looking at me through the window. And
yes.
I don't know what they were thinking. I don't know why they believed me, but they obviously saw that I was scared enough that I thought I had seen something.
Yeah, if someone's scared enough, you're going to read truth into what they're saying. So what then?
They pulled the motorhome over on the side of a road.
I would, too.
Yeah, my dad peeked his head out of the door or whatever, and he saw someone on the roof of the motorhome. And so he ducked back inside, and he got his friend that was with us, who was, I think he was an ex-Marine or an ex-Navy guy, a very big, tough guy.
Yeah.
So was my dad. You know, they weren't guys that would be afraid of a, you know, a hitchhiker on the
road. So they both went out there and then did what?
Well, they said that they saw what looked like a little skinny college-aged guy running away into a field. And they said that they chased him into the field, but he disappeared in the field.
Disappeared?
And, yeah, I'm not exactly sure what my dad meant by that when I was talking with him about that.
All right, skip then to this. What do you think you saw?
I am not sure to this day. I just got the impression that that whatever it was that was looking at me through that window did not have good intentions at all.
I gotcha. All right, thank you very, very much. Going down the road, you've done that, right? Whether in a car or a motorhome, just looking out the window, watching the trees and the scenery go by, and a head upside down with glowing eyes pops upside down, staring you right in the face. Yeah. Hi there, you're on the air, Coast to Coast AM with, Ghost to Ghost AM. Okay, Dana, we don't allow last names on the air, so I had to bleep that out. So suffice to say, it is Dana calling from where?
Calling from Arizona.
All
right. Thanks to Clear Channel and KFYI, your signal's coming in loud and strong over this Halloween Eve tonight.
Way to rock with a promo. So you have a story for us?
I have a story. I have a son, Dylan, who, when he was about he's about the same age as I was when this happened. And the story I'd like to dedicate tonight for all your the children, the listeners, who either their parents have said they could listen to your show or they've had to wait for their mother and father to go to sleep.
So I honestly hope it's not too many children listening. Really, I do.
There might be a few. A long time ago, when I was young, I was very fortunate because my best friend was also my cousin. And it had been a Friday night, and I was going over to my aunt's and uncle's farm to do a sleepover with my cousin Kelly. And late that night, it was a great night, but we had heard noises coming from his window, from the outside of the farm window. Now, I'm sure that many of the young listeners have, from time to time might have heard noises coming from their window. Now, my uncle and aunt had a big farm, but the farm was right next to the old Mesa Cemetery. So that's where these noises were coming from. Early Saturday morning, we got up. Kelly and I loaded our Daisy Red Ryder BB guns and proceeded to
heavy armament.
Yes, heavy armament of a time that's long gone here from things like that.
Yes.
But we took our guns and loaded them with BBs and got ready to sneak out of the house to go over to the cemetery to see what could have been going on last night and the noises that we heard. As Kelly and I were leaving out very quietly out the door, his two younger brothers, Steve and John, had woken up, and they saw us, and they wanted to come. So in lieu of waking my Aunt Helen or Uncle Wayne up to let them know what we were doing, we took them with us, too. So off we went into the early morning with our Red Ryder BB guns for an adventure.
Hunting ghosts with BB guns. That's good.
Exactly. We were a little scared, but we couldn't let Kelly's two younger brothers, Steve and John, know that something might be wrong.
Yes.
And as we got to the cemetery, it was very ominous, and my heart started to race. And they look. They have these old cypress trees there, the Italian cypress trees that get so big. And the large trees in the cemetery cast a dark shadow. And as we walked, you could feel your heartbeat moving. And then the shadows seemed to be following us as we walked down the long, lonely cemetery road. Now, as we walked, Art, we came to what looked like a pile of fresh dirt. Uh-huh. And as we got there, sure enough, there's this pile of dirt about 4 or 5 feet in height.
It's a pretty big pile of dirt.
Was a big pile of dirt. Now, if you've ever seen a gopher dig a hole, how it throws the dirt out, you get the fresh dirt, and then it kind of starts to dry.
Yes.
And this is what this pile was like. There was no shovel digging chumps or anything. This is a pile of fresh dirt like that.
Got it.
By the pile of dirt was a hole that was about 7 or 8 feet. And by the hole in the pile of dirt laid a casket that was all charred and burned out.
Oh, now, man.
We looked at the casket not knowing what might be in the casket. We're going to see a body, where we're going to see bones, what we're going to see.
I'd be voting for a body, probably.
Well, there's like a smell of a burned, kind of a singeing burn smell.
Oh.
We get to the casket, and we look into the casket, and what should we see? Not a thing. The casket was still warm to the touch, but the inside of the total casket was completely charred, completely burned out.
Oh, man.
Now, Art, as young boys, we didn't know what to do, so we thought we'd get Doug, Mark, or Craig, and they were some friends that were about 2 or 3 years older than us, and we figured they'd know what to do.
Yes.
So we ran off down to get Doug, and he came back with Mark and Craig, and they decided that they would take the casket and take it over to Doug's barn and put it there for safekeeping until we could figure out what to do with it.
Why?
Well, we didn't know what else to do with it. We found the casket, and
yeah.
Finders keepers.
Yeah,
we
I
didn't
guess.
Know any better as young boys.
I guess.
We took the casket and put it over at Doug's house and kind of hid it in the back of the barn until we could figure out what to do with it.
Yes.
Many years have gone by. The casket's been used for haunted houses. It's been used for spook alleys every Halloween. But nobody really knows the true story of what happened and how it came to be. And one year, the Emerson School was doing a haunted house, and they had wanted to use the casket for their haunted house. And somehow I had gotten volunteered to have to lay in it dressed as a vampire. And I could only take about an hour of it because it just creeped me out, just being in that casket. So whatever happened. But through all these years, there's always been three questions in my mind, Art, that what could it have been? Was it damnation, resurrection, or just grave robbers?
God, I don't know. But that's one hell of a story. Thank you very much. A burned-out casket. Finders keepers. As it relates to caskets, can you imagine? Still all warm. As if, I don't know, it sprang from the dirt or something all by itself, and the occupant gone. Nothing but heat left. Finders keepers. God, only kids, huh? Hi, you're on the air, Ghost to Ghost 05. Welcome.
Are you talking to me, Art?
I am talking to you, sir.
Okay.
What is your first name and where are you?
Well, it's Ivy, and I'm Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay, now, Ivy, what's up?
Okay, well, you asked for somebody to send you email on ghost stories. I've had several ghostly experiences.
All right, well, we only have time for the scariest of them all.
All right. Well, we were living with my in-laws at the time. I was married. And I was working the night shift, and it was my night off. Everybody else upstairs sleeping. And I was sitting in a semi-darkened living room, lit only by a street light outside, meditating on nothing in particular. Suddenly, there was a presence in the room by the TV. Nearly everyone's had the experience of sitting in a crowded auditorium and felt someone staring at the back of their head.
Sure,
turned around and looked
sure.
at that one person. That's how I sense entities. Anyhow, I've had several such experiences, but this one was very strong. I also sensed basic emotions such as anger, fear, confusion, and so on, and I was sensing great fear. I saw nothing but the inside of the room. I said something like, "It's okay, go outside and someone will be there to meet you." In just an instant, whatever or whoever it was beside my chair and gave me a hug that almost knocked the wind out of me.
A hug?
There was no physical feeling to this, but it was definitely a powerful hug. And then in an instant, it was gone. I spent the rest of the night wondering exactly what had happened. The next day, while I was sleeping, my mother-in-law called Uncle Harold, her 90-year-old brother-in-law who lived across town, to see how he was doing. There was no answer. So she took a key to his house and went over to check on him. When she got there, she could see him sitting in his easy chair, but there was no response to her knock, so she let herself in. The best guess was that he had died at the exact time that I had received my visitation the night before. It was after I got up and told them of my experience the previous night, and they informed me of Uncle Harold's demise, that led to some interesting conversation.
God, I bet. No doubt in your mind about where that hug came from, right?
Pardon me?
no doubt in your mind about where that hug came from.
Oh, I have no doubt at all. Uncle Harold and I were very, very close. And he had willed his house to my mother-in-law, and since we didn't have a home at the time, we moved into there. It was just full of his little inventions. He was quite the inventor. And when I got a novice ham license, I was privileged to use the same antenna that he had used to contact Admiral Perry on at least one of his polar expeditions.
Well, thank you very much for the call. It's always wonderful to move into a house where, if you're a ham radio operator, where there's already an antenna. But in this case, a hug, huh? Yes, already indications of a sort of a early theme that the dead want to come back at least long enough to let somebody know that they're all right, or in some way give them an indication. I believe I had such when my father passed. Is it that, or is it that you're looking for something? Well, I can tell you honestly, I certainly wasn't. In the case of my dad, it was a little bat that landed on our porch on the morning of his passing. It was so unusual, it stayed the day and it just left, and it was fine, but this bat just flew virtually right down to my feet on the front porch, and just, it was bizarre. Anyway, I think that those who pass do try to let those who remain know in some way, sometimes very graphically, that they're still there. Good morning. You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM, Ghost to Ghost AM with Art Bell.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi, this is Mike from Vancouver, Washington.
Good morning, Mike.
Hey. Yeah, I wanted to tell you a story about when I was around 11 years old. I went to a church camp. I loved this church. It was Sky Lake. It was in the Windsor, Damascus area of New York.
Yes, sir.
And, well, it's kind of like, are you familiar with, like, the Friday the 13th movies? You know how the kids are with their campers with the...
Of course.
You know, you have the boy group and the girl group. Well, we all went out in a field and did a stargaze. And it was about 30, 40 of us. And, well, I got woke up in the morning, early morning, about 4 o'clock, 4:15. It was where the sky was just starting to turn light, and it's still dark. And, I thought, you know, I might as well, everyone's dead asleep. The fog is rolling in. It's kind of damp. And I thought, well, you know, I might as well go to the restroom area and take a shower. That way I can get done, and that way there's before the lions and stuff. So I went over, and there's this shower area with a bathroom area, like 8 stalls in the boys' room. And it's located next to this forest line. About a football field away from where the group was.
Yes.
So I went over and walked into the bathroom and, you know, got my stuff, and I sensed something like a presence, and I just kind of dismissed it because I didn't know. I was only 11 years old. I wasn't really thinking about anything bad or anything. And then I heard like a giggle, like a little kid. And I start looking underneath the stalls, and there's nobody there. And I look out the window. I could jump up and look out the window, and everyone's asleep. And so the giggle stopped. And so I proceeded to take a shower, and I sudsed my hair. And then all of a sudden, I heard these children laughing, and it started to scare me.
Again, children.